the great war of the Horus Heresy. Countless deeds of both infamy and valor were carved upon the bloody stars of that age. Yet few shone brighter or bled deeper than those of the Salamander's Legion. Betrayed, struck down, nearly annihilated, the 18th Legion stood resolute against the storm. There were few legions who paid so high a price for loyalty and honor, and fewer still who shed their blood so willingly in mankind's defense time and again. Beyond all measure or reason. But first, I just wanted to take a moment to let you know about my newer Warhammer 40K channel, Vox Umbra. It's where I do deep dives into the lore, but where you're meant to watch, not sleep. With video effects and voice acting in-universe dialogue, I think it's great content for anyone who enjoys the lore. So if that sounds interesting to you, you'd be doing me a great favor by checking it out. The link is in the description below. Thank you, and sleep well as we get back to your regularly scheduled sleep content. The Salamanders are such a legion. Though driven to near extinction not once, but many times throughout their long history, they have always risen anew. Reborn from fire and ruin like their namesake. Tempered by suffering, stronger for their scars, they are as the blades of their own legendary forges. Unbroken, undefeated, and true to their cause. Like many proto-legion formations in the waning years of the Unification Wars, the origins of the 18th Legion are shrouded in secrecy. Much concerning their founding, their early intake, and their first deployments remains unknown. The Emperor himself cloaked the creation of the Legion's Astartes in deliberate mystery, both to safeguard the fledgling project from hostile eyes and to conceal his own deeper designs. Whatever truths existed about these first terrible days now lie buried with the handful of confidants who might have known them. It is said that the 18th Legion, known in its earliest years as the Dragon Warriors, was created alongside the 6th and 20th Legions, later named the Space Wolves and the Alpha Legion. Together, this trefoil of proto-legions shared a peculiar origin. Formed apart, veiled even from their peers, and bound to specific, undisclosed purposes known only to the Emperor and his most trusted agents. Whatever secrets surrounded their birth were never spoken of openly, by decree of the Master of Mankind himself. This veil of mystery would mark them long after. Even as the legions grew and marched, a subtle distance set the trefoil apart from their brotherhood. Whispered rumors surrounded the 18th's earliest recruits, dark conjectures about the origins of their gene stock and the means of their creation. In the centuries to come, such distrust would twist into open suspicion for the Space Wolves and the Alpha Legion, while the Salamanders, redeemed by their deeds and by the character of their Primarch Vulcan, would win back the respect of their kin. But in in the beginning, it was not so. In the first years of the Great Crusade, around 798 M30, the 18th's reputation was a grim one. Before they became paragons of endurance and compassion, they were known for fury and blood. Their legacy began in the dying days of the Unification Wars, at the legendary assaults of the Tempest Galleries, a battle that defined their fate. There, the 18th fought alone and triumphed against impossible odds. They won the field, but at a terrible cost. From 20,000 warriors, fewer than 1,000 survived. Yet this victory secured their place in Imperial legend. The Legion's ranks were swiftly rebuilt, their glory earning them priority in recruits, war gear, and supply, favored above many peers. Even so, their recovery delayed their departure from Terra. While other legions blazed across the stars, the Crusade's first waves, the 18th lingered in the shadows of consolidation. In the early decades of the Great Crusade, they were scattered. The 18th rarely fought as one. Chapters and cohorts were dispatched piecemeal across dozens of expeditionary forces and special detachments, reinforcing rogue trader fleets, bolstering embattled Imperial garrisons, or striking at sudden threats behind the Crusade's front lines. They fought Xenos raiders, hunted space hulks spilling from the warp, and saved colonists from horrors unearthed by their own expansion. In these crises, they were often the only Astartes present, commanding mixed human forces, spearheading assaults, and bleeding first and last in every engagement. They seldom chose their battlefields. They fought wherever the Imperium faltered. Formal compliance actions were few, yet their roll of battle honors grew long, each marked by desperate courage and harrowing cost. Among the Imperial Army, a grim saying took root. To be assigned alongside the 18th was to be bound for a field drenched in blood. When sieges needed breaking, when a line had to hold, when a civilian world needed saving at any price, it was the Salamanders who were sent. Their courage was unrelenting, their sacrifices relentless. To face impossible odds was, to them, the only victory worth the name. Some whispered that the Legion had become addicted to such battles, that their valor had turned suicidal. Yet, whether truth or slander, none could deny that the 18th never turned from duty. Even when tactical sins demanded retreat, they fought on until nothing remained to give. In legendary battles such as the Manticore Cataclysm, they refused to yield, paying in blood for their own unreachable standard of honor. This reputation earned them admiration in some quarters of the Imperial High Command, and disdain in others. Lord Commander Actia of the 13th Legion, bitter over Manticore, declared that the 18th carried within them the seeds of their own destruction. He compared them to the erratic 5th Legion, whose wild nature vexed the Crusade, or the unstable 3rd, whose genetic flaws awaited their Primarch's cure. Whether fair or not, the judgment lingered. Attrition compounded the challenge. The 18th never reached the full muster strength of their peers. Their interrupted development, their constant bloodletting, and their isolation, both logistical and self-imposed, kept their numbers low, and their kinship with other legions distant. By the fourth decade of the Great Crusade, some in the War Council openly questioned whether the 18th would survive at all. Yet survive they did, though bloodied, diminished, and haunted by the ghosts of their own fire, they endured. And when their Primarch was found, they would rise from shadow and ash to become what history remembers them as, the Salamanders, guardians of humanity's flame. In the early years of the Great Crusade, when the stars themselves seemed to tremble beneath the march of the legions, the 18th remained a legion without a father. They fought as orphans, valiant but rootless, bound together not by a lineage, but by duty alone. While other legions were transformed by the rediscovery of their primarchs, the Salamanders-to-be wandered the endless void, their name still unclaimed, their purpose still undefined. That would change with the discovery of a single world, a world born of fire. The planet was called Nocturne, and it burned. Its orbit was unstable, pulled by the vast gravitational tides of a massive moon named Prometheus. Each solar cycle, Nocturne was racked by cataclysmic quakes and volcanic eruptions, so fierce they reshaped continents. Its surface was a landscape of obsidian plains, magma rivers, and smoke-choked skies. A forge world of nature's own making. Yet amid the chaos, life endured. Human settlers had long made their homes there, living in rugged clans across scattered settlements. They hunted the great salamanders of the mountains for food and hide, mined the volcanic crust for precious minerals, and forged weapons of unmatched craftsmanship from the planet's rare ores. They were a hardy people, simple, strong, and unbowed by a world that sought daily to destroy them. It was upon Nocturne that the Primarch Vulcan fell. When his incubation pod descended through the firestorms of the world, it was discovered by the blacksmith Nebel, a man of great strength, quiet wisdom. He raised the child as his own, teaching him the craft of the forge and the worth of labor. Vulcan grew into a giant, even among his people, taller, broader, gentle of heart, and filled with a deep sense of justice. His laughter was loud, his mercy boundless, and his strength beyond imagining. In time, he would save his village from raiders, slay the great salamanders of the volcanic peaks with his bare hands, and craft blades of fire steel so pure that none could match him. The people came to love him as their protector, calling him Lord of Drakes and Father of Fire. But even then, Vulcan's destiny stretched beyond the bounds of Nocturne's molten skies. The Emperor came to him in disguise. He arrived as a wanderer during a festival of trials, where the greatest smiths and hunters of Nocturne gathered to prove their skill. Vulcan met the stranger with kindness and respect, not knowing the divine purpose behind his golden eyes. The two entered a contest of strength and craft that lasted 7 days and 7 nights. One of endurance, intellect, and will. When at last their final challenge came, both men stood atop the fiery rim of Mount Deathfire, their forges roaring. Each was to create a weapon worthy of the other's life. Vulcan forged a blade unlike any other, a hammer wreathed in the breath of the volcano itself. The Emperor's creation was flawless beyond comprehension. But when the mountain erupted and the bridge beneath them shattered, both weapons fell into the abyss. Without hesitation, Vulcan leapt after the stranger to save him, while the Emperor's retinue looked on in awe. Vulcan dragged the man from the molten depths, burning himself near to death in the process. When he awoke, the stranger stood above him, untouched by the flame, holding both weapons in his hands. "You are mine, my son," the Emperor said, and at last Vulcan knelt. Thus were the Salamanders born. No longer the veiled 18th, but a legion with a father and a home. When Vulcan returned to Terra, he brought the strength of Nocturne with him, the craftsman's devotion, the protector's heart, and the fire of rebirth that would define his legion forever. Under Vulcan's guidance, the Salamanders transformed. They became artisans and warriors both, masters of the forge and saviors of the innocent. Each warrior forged his own arms and armor, seeing his war gear as a sacred extension of his soul. They believed that strength meant nothing without compassion, and that to protect humanity was their truest calling. They were slower to rebuild than their peers, for they refused to value numbers over quality, or conquest over righteousness. Yet, every salamander that strode to war was a living weapon of unmatched skill. His armor a work of art, his heart a burning furnace of loyalty and faith. The bond between Vulcan and his sons was deeper than any in the Imperium. He knew each of his captains by name, visited their forges, and fought beside them in the fires of countless worlds. Where other Primarchs ruled as distant gods, Vulcan led as a father among equals. The Emperor saw in Vulcan a reflection of his own ideal. Strength tempered by mercy, courage refined by wisdom, and charged the Salamanders with protecting humanity's most vulnerable worlds during the Great Crusade. They became the flame that guarded the dark, the shield against the cold night between stars. But in time, even the brightest flame casts a shadow. And when the Horus Heresy came, the Salamanders would learn the true cost of fire. The galaxy burned. Brother turned against brother, son against father. And the dream of unity forged in the Emperor's name fell into ruin. When Horus, War Master of the Imperium, fell to the whispers of chaos, the stars themselves seemed to recoil. In a single act of treachery, the light of mankind's golden age dimmed, and all the legions were cast into the long shadow of the Horus Heresy. For the salamanders, that shadow would come in fire. At the height of the heresy, Vulcan and his legion were summoned to the Istvan system, where the traitor Horus had struck first. The War Master's rebellion had spread like poison through the ranks of the Astartes, and the Emperor's loyal sons rallied to bring him justice. Vulcan, Ferus Manus of the Iron Hands, and Corvus Corax of the Raven Guard led the second wave of Imperial retribution, an armada meant to crush the traitors and reclaim the galaxy from madness. They believed themselves among brothers. They believed they were bringing salvation. Instead, they were being led into a trap. When the loyalist forces made planetfall on Istvan V, they fought with the fury of the righteous. The salamanders advanced through fire and ruin, their flame weapons scouring the trenches of the enemy, their thunder hammers breaking corrupted iron and flesh alike. Vulcan led from the front, his warhammer Dawnbringer rising and falling like a comet. The Iron Hand struck with relentless precision, while the Raven Guard's shadows closed around the flanks. For a brief, shining moment, victory seemed near. Then, the guns fell silent. From the heights of the Urgal Depression, the signal flared, a brilliant light that turned to horror as the reinforcements descended not as saviors, but executioners. The Alpha Legion, Night Lords, Word Bearers, and Iron Warriors, those who had sworn loyalty, turned their weapons upon their brothers. The ground erupted with bombardment as the Loyalists realized the truth too late. The betrayal became known as the Drop Site Massacre. Under the burning skies of Istvan V, the salamanders were torn apart. Their green armor, once the color of renewal, was shattered and blackened beneath the fury of orbital fire. Vulcan refused to retreat. He gathered what remained of his sons and fought through the encircling tide of traitors, his body wreathed in fire, his hammer breaking heretics in two. But for every enemy he felled, 100 more came. The Iron Hands were decimated, Ferus Manus himself slain by the hand of his brother Fulgrim. The Raven Guard were driven into the wastes, bleeding and broken. And the salamanders were engulfed. Entire companies perished to the last warrior, standing firm around their Primarch as the storm closed in. When at last Vulcan fell, his armor cracked, his weapon lost. It was not in defeat, but in defiance. The traitors took his body, believing him dead, and delivered it as a trophy to Conrad Kurz, the Night Haunter. Yet the Night Lord's Primarch soon learned that Vulcan could not die. He awoke again, in torment and chains. Kurz, a creature of nightmares, sought to break the Fireborn's will, to prove that even a Primarch's spirit could be extinguished. He tortured Vulcan endlessly, flaying his flesh, breaking his bones, killing him again and again, only for the salamander's sire to rise once more. For Vulcan was a perpetual, a being who could never truly die. Through agony and rebirth, Vulcan endured. He refused to curse his tormentor. He refused to surrender. He spoke only of hope, of forgiveness, and of the flame that would one day burn away the darkness. Kurz called him a fool. Vulcan called him brother still. In time, Vulcan escaped his captors, though the ordeal left deep scars upon his mind and soul. He rejoined what few of his sons survived, their numbers scattered and broken. The salamanders were no longer a legion. They were the fragments of one, bound together by grief. Yet even in their ruin, they held to their creed. They sought no vengeance for its own sake. They turned their wrath toward salvation. On world after world, they rescued the stranded, the lost, the forsaken, soldiers and civilians alike. While other legions sought the front lines of the war, the salamanders fought its forgotten battles, saving those who could be saved, shielding those who could not. Even as their numbers dwindled, their compassion endured. When at last the heresy drew to its terrible end with the Siege of Terra, few salamanders stood to fight upon the walls of the Imperial Palace. Vulcan's legion had been all but extinguished, yet their deeds, their heroism, their defiance, echoed louder than any legion 10 times their strength. And though the fires of Istvan had nearly consumed them, the salamander's flame did not die. For fire, once kindled, remembers. The fires of Istvan V had burned the salamanders almost to extinction. When the storm of betrayal passed, when the ashes cooled, when the silence of the dead settled across the Urgal Plain, only a handful of the fireborn remained. Their ships were scattered, their gene forges shattered, their Primarch vanished. Yet even shattered steel may be reforged, and the salamanders were nothing if not masters of the forge. They gathered what fragments they could, stray companies, battered strike forces, survivors rescued from the void, and bound them together beneath a single banner once more. The scouring had begun. The great reckoning that followed the fall of Horus. The loyal sons of the Emperor turned to hunt their treacherous brothers from the stars. For the salamanders, it was not vengeance that drove them. It was duty. When the Ultramarines rebuilt order and Gilliman wrote the Codex Astartes, the salamanders roamed the bleeding frontiers, seeking out the remnants of chaos and the traitor legions that had fled into the warp. Each battle fought was a wound reopened, every victory bought with blood. Again and again, they stood where the need was greatest, never asking for praise, never counting their losses. But amid that long war, the salamanders also searched for their father. Rumors whispered through the Imperium that Vulcan yet lived, that he walked among men, healing the wounded, forging weapons of divine craft, or vanishing into fire. Some claimed to have seen him upon Caldera, battling demons with his bare hands. Others said he strode the lava plains of Nocturne once more, silent and grief-stricken. None could prove the truth. The salamanders' hearts clung to hope, for they knew their Primarch could not die. Vulcan was a perpetual, blessed or cursed with endless life. Yet his return was as uncertain as the dawn after a long night. In his absence, The Legion endured by faith and by memory. They rebuilt Nocturne, uniting once more with its seven great settlements, the seven sanctuaries, each bound to the chapter's structure. From the volcanic moon Prometheus, they established new forges and fortress monastery, the Crown of Fire, where the sons of Vulcan would henceforth be trained, armed, and tested in the Crucible of Flame. There, they reforged their identity, not as conquerors, but as guardians of humanity. From the ashes of the Great Crusade's wars, the Salamanders shaped themselves anew, the image of their Primarch's ideals. They tempered their fury with compassion, their might with mercy. To the common folk of the Imperium, they became mythic saviors. Warriors who would kneel beside the wounded, who would shield the helpless, even as battle raged around them. Where other chapters might see only strategic worth, the Salamander saw lives worth saving. When Gilliman's second founding divided the legions into smaller chapters, the Salamanders were few enough already. They did not resist the decree, for it aligned with their belief that strength should serve, not rule. The 18th Legion became the Salamanders' chapter, though even then they could scarcely muster a fraction of the numbers of their brother chapters. The rest of their gene seed was used to found successor chapters, few of which would ever mirror the nobility of their parent line. Still, the Salamanders endured. Through the long millennia that followed, the endless crusades, the Xenos Wars, the purges of heresy and madness, they stood their ground. During the age of apostasy, they defied the excesses of the ecclesiarchy, refusing to turn their faith into fanaticism. In the War of the Beast, they fought upon Armageddon and across 100 burning worlds, their flame weapons cleansing the greenskin hordes. When the 13th Black Crusade split the galaxy asunder, the Salamanders were there again, standing upon the ramparts of Nocturne, their planet shaking beneath the warp storm's light. Through every age, their creed endured. Protect the weak, endure the fire, be the shield of humanity. Yet, even as the centuries passed, the question of Vulcan lingered like a coal that would not cool. Some said the Primarch had returned only briefly in the millennia after the heresy, guiding his sons before vanishing once again. Others whispered that he had forged a series of relics, the 9 artifacts of Vulcan, each hidden across the galaxy as a test of faith and endurance. It was said that when the Salamanders recovered all 9, their father would rise again. The truth remains uncertain. What is known is that the Salamanders never abandoned hope. In the deepest forges of Prometheus, they still craft their weapons in his image. In their prayers, they still call upon his name. To them, Vulcan is not gone. He is waiting, within the fire, within the hearts of his sons, within every act of mercy and sacrifice that keeps humanity's light alive. They are fewer than they once were, but each Salamander is a flame in the dark, a spark of their Primarch's unyielding soul, and across 10,000 years of war and ruin, that fire has never gone out. 10,000 years have passed since the fires of Istvan. 10,000 years since the Emperor was entombed upon his golden throne, and the galaxy fell to endless war. In that long night, the salamanders have stood their watch. From their twin thrones of Nocturne and Prometheus, the sons of Vulcan guard the Imperium's southern reaches, ever watchful against the darkness that seeks to engulf it. Though their numbers are few, their deeds shine brighter than the suns they fight beneath. They are the artisans of war and the shepherds of humanity. Warriors of flame, yet keepers of mercy. The Salamander's chapter structure is unlike any among other Adeptus Astartes. They remain small, often below the nominal 1,000 battle brothers prescribed by the Codex Astartes, for the gene seed of Vulcan is slow to mature and rare to replicate. But their strength lies not in number, it lies in spirit. Each salamander is forged through trial, shaped by pain, and tempered in the volcanic furnaces of their world. Upon Nocturne, every child knows the forge. From birth, they learn the value of labor and the sanctity of craft. When the time of trial comes, those chosen to ascend to the ranks of the chapter must survive the trial of fire, a pilgrimage across the burning equatorial wastes of Nocturne, where molten rivers flow like living suns, and storms of ash blot out the sky. Those who return are reborn as neophytes, ready to bear the mantle of Vulcan's sons. Once accepted, they train within the Crown of Fire, the mighty fortress monastery that hangs above Prometheus, where forges the size of cities thunder day and night. Each brother crafts his own arms and armor, often over the course of years, etching every plate and weapon with prayers of endurance and remembrance. To wield another's work is shame. To forge one's own is sacred. Where other chapters venerate victory, the salamanders venerate service. They walk among the people of Nocturne, teaching and protecting them, rather than ruling as gods. Their settlements and forges intertwine with those of their human kin, and their warriors are often seen aiding miners, rescuing those trapped in quakes, or rebuilding towns destroyed by fire. Salamanders do not call these acts of charity, they call them duty. When war calls, they answer as both guardians and avengers. Their favored weapons are the gifts of the forge, flamers, meltas, and thunderhammers wrought in Promethean flame. They strike not for glory, but for necessity, and every enemy burned in the cleansing heat of their wrath is a reminder that fire destroys, but it also purifies. In battle, their methods are deliberate and precise. The salamanders are not swift like the White Scars, nor ruthless like the Space Wolves. They advance as an inexorable tide, their bolters thundering, their armor blackened by fire. They are methodical craftsmen of war, shaping every campaign with the patience of smiths working molten metal. When a salamander strikes, it is not with fury, but with purpose. Their compassion sets them apart. Where others would burn a world to cinders to deny it to the enemy, the salamanders will fight to preserve it. Where some chapters view the lives of the ordinary humans as expendable The Fireborn see in every soul the spark of mankind's promise. To abandon the innocent is, to them, the greatest heresy of all. But compassion has its cost. The galaxy is merciless, and the Salamander's refusal to sacrifice humanity's spirit has often left them stretched thin and bleeding. Many times they have fought alone when others might have withdrawn. Many times they have been scorned by less patient allies who mistake mercy for weakness. Yet even so, the Salamanders endure. In the present age, the Era Indomitus, the Salamanders stand once more amid a galaxy divided by the Great Rift. When the skies of the Imperium split and the Astronomicon flickered, when demons poured forth and entire sectors were swallowed by shadow, it seemed the end had come at last. But hope, like fire, cannot be extinguished so easily. The reborn Rebute Gilliman, the Lord Commander of the Imperium, rose from the dust of the ages and called the faithful to arms. When the Indomitus Crusade began, the Salamanders answered. Upon the battlefields from Armageddon to Vigilus, they fought beside Gilliman's new armies of Primaris Space Marines, the next evolution of their kind. The Salamanders accepted these new brothers without pride or suspicion, for they saw in them not a challenge to their legacy, but an expansion of it. Among the Primaris, the Salamanders found kin who shared their compassion and endurance and welcomed them into the Forge. The old ways were taught anew, the reverence of craftsmanship, the honor of service, the sacred balance between destruction and salvation. Together, the Fireborn reforged themselves for a new age of endless war. And still, the legends persist that Vulcan lives. The Salamanders never deny the rumors or the tales of Vulcan's sightings. They only nod and say, "He watches still." To the Salamanders, faith is not born of hope alone. It is born of endurance. They believe that one day, when the galaxy's night is deepest, Vulcan will rise again from the fire, as he always has, to lead his sons once more. Until that day, they fight in his name, carrying his flame across the stars. 10,000 years have passed since the Emperor's dream burned away in betrayal. 10,000 years since the Sons of Fire were broken on the anvil of Istvan. Yet still the Salamanders endure. Still they guard humanity's flame. And as long as one of their number draws breath, the fire of Vulcan shall never die.